been avoiding conflict lately? Are you afraid that if you speak your truth to someone, you might damage the relationship permanently? Is inner conflict eating you up inside? Maybe you're thinking one thing, but doing another, and you just can't seem to get your head and heart to line up. As humans, we all deal with conflict. Join Jennifer McKenna now as she talks to business leaders about the importance of conflict and how we can all move through it with greater grace and ease, ultimately taking our relationships and our lives to the next level by facing conflict courageously.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Conflict Rising. We talk every Thursday at 3 about the things that cause us inner conflict and cause us to have conflict with others and how to move through that with greater grace and ease. As the saying goes, it's always darkest before the dawn. And right now, it feels like we are at our darkest culturally that we can imagine. We have so many divisive issues and experiences that we're being faced with, and it is a hardship on us all individually. It's hard on our hearts. It's hard on our minds, and just as hard on our relationships when we have loved ones who see things very differently. So the purpose of the show every week is just to talk about those things and welcome guests every week who are working in certain areas that are meaningful to these conversations. So today, I welcome my good friend wonderful professional when it comes to English as a second language instruction, Carol Glickman. She's joining us today. And Carol, welcome to the show.
Thanks for being here.
I have to tell the listeners the funniest thing is that you and I are friends. We started out as mom friends because our children have been really close friends since they were 2 and 3 years old, and now they're all teenagers. And yet I find out that you have been doing work with refugees through your rabbi that I happened to run into at a yoga class. And I thought to myself, no, wait a minute, how am I finding this very important information out in this way? So that speaks volumes to how busy Carol and I are and how challenging it is for us to have conversation. So I told her, I'm just going to put you live on the show and I'm going to find out everything I want to know when everyone else finds out. So thank you for being a good sport. Can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing with the refugee program at your synagogue and what made you decide to do it?
So I was working at Georgia Piedmont Technical College in Clarkston, Georgia, which is a huge hub for refugees. And we had about 1,200 students last year, and about 50% of those are refugees. So it's a very big refugee community. And the synagogue was interested in, working with refugees, and people want to help, but they just don't know how to go about it. So we came up with a couple of ideas where they could, work with the refugees, talk to them, get to know them, and feel like they're helping. And so we started a conversation cafe, which is where the volunteers from the synagogue come in, they bring food, and after class, we have conversation. So they sit around and have conversation. And also, they started a clothing closet and tutoring as well. So a lot of them come in once a week and pull out students from classes if their level is too high or too low, and they work with them. So it was a way to help the students, the refugees, to hook them up with people who could help them, to make them feel welcome, at a time when they don't. And then also to help the synagogue find a way into that world. So that was the sort of the purpose. And a lot of those refugees in Clarkston, I think about, 80 or 90% are Muslim. And so it's just a nice way for the communities to meet and talk and not talk about anything serious, but just get to know each other. And so the rabbi does come to the conversation cafes with his kids, And I think it's been really nice.
It sounds incredibly important, and I can't imagine how gratifying that must be. And so what comes to mind for me is we think about all the cultural conflicts and the misinformation around just Muslim, the Muslim population to begin with, the Muslim relationship with the Jewish community, and then also just refugees in general, right? So there's just a ton of misinformation. I'd love to talk about all of that today on the show and get your opinion, because you have been on the front line. You do know the truth, the humanity in the situation, dare I say, which is what we seem to keep losing in the greater dialogues when we're talking politically, or when we hear things on the airwaves when they're taking a political position. So, where do we begin, Carol? Where do we begin? What makes you passionate about this, and what have you learned more than anything from your experience?
Well, I mean, it's everyone that works in that community is passionate about, you know, working with refugees. I mean, they're not magical people. So it's not like they're better than everyone else because they're refugees. They're the good, the bad, the ugly. They're people like everyone else. But I think it's just that they've been through so much. And they've you know, struggled so much, and they've made it. They're kind of the 1% that actually gets here. You know, it's a very small number, and they're so grateful to be here. They really are. It's interesting to watch them. Like in class, if someone doesn't stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance, if the teacher's teaching that, the others are like, stand up, put your hand on your heart. I mean, they're very happy to be here. They're very grateful to be here. Even though it's so hard for them here, I mean, it really is a struggle. It's not like they're getting a ton of stuff. They get, you know, resettlement in the beginning, but a lot of them really struggle. And, you know, a lot of them come from situations where they didn't have an education. They weren't, you know, they were in refugee camps. They, you know, I have, you know, there were some women, like this woman from Ghana, who told me, you know, that she was put to work as a domestic servant by her family, and so she never went to school, but she's so smart, and so, you know, she keeps going. She's so optimistic, and so all of that makes everyone, I think, who works in that community really passionate about helping these people. And you know, even though I don't know, I mean, maybe some of them don't like Jewish people, you know, I don't know, but I've never had any problem, and that's such a, you know, fraught, you know, you have to be so careful when you talk about that, but there's never been any problem. And, so it just doesn't even occur to me when I'm there. You know, I have my own ideas maybe about politics, but when I'm there and I'm in the classroom and I'm helping them, you just forget about all of that. You know, it's just this person here who needs your help and wants to do well. And so, yeah, I think that's, you know, sort of why people who work in that community are passionate about you know, helping these people. So, and what was the other question? There were two questions.
Well,
I forgot.
Well, I think you've covered it, but you've brought up something that makes me ask more questions. And one is, you said, you know, only 1% make it. So what happens to the others?
I mean, there's so many, you know, there's this kind of idea that there's a crisis. But the real crisis is in those countries where they're coming from. You know, and especially in America, I mean, we're geographically, our refugee, you know, resettlement situation is very controlled because we're geographically separated. So we don't have people, you know, kind of coming over the same way that, you know, what went on in Europe in like 2016 and 17, which is where I think everybody got kind of nervous. When they saw that, and they, you know, everyone said crisis because there were a lot of people coming in. There is a crisis, but the crisis I think really is in those countries. And you know, when you're talking about refugees, you really have to look at it's such a bigger issue. It's like what goes on in those countries that people leave to give up everything to come. And I think you know, the European Union has very, very rigid and strict mechanisms to keep people out, really, from people from even reaching their countries to apply for refugee status. So, So, a lot of people die along the way. I mean, we've all seen pictures. Some people just go back. There's a lot of, there's been all this talk about people in Libya who are slaves, and then they, get out. I mean, it's a sad story. It's like a have and have not, So there's so many other issues surrounding refugees other than just we're trying to protect ourselves from these people. It's it seems absurd almost, at least here, but you can't, it really isn't, because people's fears are real, I get,
Well, so do the refugees talk about, like, maybe in these conversation cafes, do they talk about the situation that they're leaving? What are the stories like? And because I often think that fear is born out of ignorance, and ignorance is just a lack of knowledge. And a lack of knowledge means we have no context or information, therefore we're making up ideas to fill that void. So, what is really happening? What are some of the crises? We only hear some of it, and yet most of the conversation is about, that perceived crisis here. So we don't really get a lot of information coming into us freely that tells us the dire consequences of these other lives in these other countries. Do you have stories from some of them? I mean, that sounds bad enough.
We never really asked them, and then the teachers, I was an administrator and I taught, was a lot in the classroom helping and taught when teachers couldn't teach, but they may know better than I do. But, we just never asked them to talk about it. But there are, so just the countries that they come from, like, the country that was the most representative for a long time was Burma, Myanmar, and those people, they don't want to leave their country. Life is hard here. There, mm-hmm. like this guy told me, I didn't have any bills. There was no electric bill, no water bill. There was no bills. He had a huge family. Everything, the language. And then you come here and you're like a child and you have to work all the time. And, it's a very hard life. So, So the countries that they come from, like, Burma, and we had some Rohingya people, which are the Muslim people that I think there's like a million refugees now in Bangladesh of those people that the allegedly the government of Myanmar killed, and lots of other ethnic groups as well from Myanmar. And then the other countries right now are Congo, the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo. And that situation is so, so horrible,
dire.
What goes on there. Yeah. And, just has been for so long, and there's so many different players there. I mean, the political situation, that include the U.S. and Western countries that are involved. So, those people just suffer. And so, but the end result, what we see is people who, have never gone to school, or we have like a Vietnamese American guy who he and his wife had, because he was mixed, was not allowed to go. He'd never set foot in a school building. And so it was his first time to walk into a school, and he was like 40. So we have, there's at Georgia Piedmont, out of like the 1,200 students, there's about 100 that are pre-literate. They can't read or write in any language. They go into classes for, to learn the alphabet and to learn to write their name and that kind of thing. So the result of whatever they've been through is just a lack of education, but they come to school. And there was a guy from Guatemala who was one of 15 children, and his parents didn't have money to send him to school, but now he's here and he wants to show his children that he can still learn. So he goes to school. So it's hard not to be inspired by all of that. So you're not trying to glorify suffering or say that, but there is something about being without your language, without your culture, that humbles you. And that kind of humility, to work with people who have that kind of humility is, you can learn from it. basically. So
right, it must be awe-inspiring, right? And it's so far from, yeah, from where the average American sits, no matter how hard our lives are, and can be, for sure. I'm definitely not minimizing that we've got homeless issues and we've got all kinds of economic struggles ourselves, but and education struggles and that type of thing. But, you know, when you stop looking at the lines that divide us and you start looking at that human element, it really is just profound that anyone would try to crucify the person who has just sacrificed their entire lives to start from scratch with nothing and very little potential in a brand new culture with no skills, with no resources. I think it's almost so extreme, it's hard to wrap your mind around what that experience would be like.
Yeah, I think it would be. You know, you get a taste of it when you go to another country and you can't speak the language. You know, you feel like a child
and that's,
again.
But. Right. And half the time when you do that, you still have money in your bank account to get you where you want to go. You know, you can still have a decent experience and just have a language barrier, but yet that's hard. And so when you take away all of those other safety nets, I can't imagine how terrifying that must be.
Yeah.
So I love that you're doing this. Yeah, it's good stuff. So you've been citing a lot. Well, you know what? I'm going to save my next question. Let's take a commercial break. And when we come back, I've got more questions for you. So stay tuned.
Okay. Thanks.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America and all your problems are done, they don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone. We have Carol Glickman joining us today, who has been on the front lines with the refugee program through her synagogue, and she's also been an ESL, which is English as a Second Language instructor, for many years. And so she's sharing with us really, really great stories about what it's like to work directly with refugees. What's the real story, not what we keep hearing coming out of Washington, D.C. to try to scare us all. And so on that note, you have cited, Carol, refugees from Asia and Africa and some of the more distant countries. And, You know, so much of the messages coming out of Washington, D.C. here are so fear-inducing about our southern border. All of these refugees from South America and Central America and how they're going to just infiltrate our country with drugs. And not that I want to minimize that there isn't illegal trafficking going on. There is. It's important that we police that. That is not my message. But I am curious to know your perspective on this. And have you worked with refugees from those areas of the world? And how does that differ? And why isn't the greater landscape of the whole world and the refugees from all over the world being factored into that conversation? I would just love your opinion on these things. So where to start? Jump in.
So you're asking about my perspective on just the refugee situation coming from our southern border, basically.
Yes, because yes. That feels like where the scare tactics are in the messaging that we are getting.
Right. I mean, I think that we all know that. Well, first of all, I guess what are they saying that makes these people sound so scary? Is number one, they're terrorists, and the truth is that, you know, there haven't been terrorists in the U.S., I guess, that are coming over the border. I mean, it just doesn't seem to be a real problem. I think we haven't seen that. The numbers just don't bear that out. And, you know, what else do they say about those refugees? They're taking up too many resources. They're taking in too many jobs. I mean, I think those things are not true. They're just not factually true, you know, about people coming from Mexico and Guatemala and those countries. I don't think that they're using too many resources at all. They pay taxes. I mean, I don't have all the numbers, but if you look at the numbers, I know that they pay taxes. They contribute a great deal to the economy. I mean, if you just sat down and looked, like, what do these people contribute? So I think that's just not, not an adequate argument I think it is just something to focus on. I just didn't even, it was so bizarre that this was like there was a crisis at the border. Like you said, I know that we have to police that and that those people, you know, we have to have immigration and have some controls over our border, of course, but I don't think there's an actual crisis. With right. refugees coming over the southern border, I think it's, you know, the crisis, there is a crisis in those countries that those people are leaving, but we don't have a crisis with them unless we, you know, make one. But I don't know, like, you know, it seems like just telling stories is very helpful, but it also can alienate people. You know, if they hear about, you know, people coming in and that kind of thing. So,
right.
Yeah.
I think it's irresponsible leadership to incite fear and almost panic when you start to use big words like crisis and terrorist. And, you know, that to me, I'm a leadership coach. I work with business leaders of major companies all the time. It is irresponsible to take a leadership position and use your position of power and influence in that way. And so I'm putting my opinion out there with this.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's true. And it's you know, it's interesting that this is what has captured people. It's like it's a way to distract people. Like there is this crisis. And so, you know, and, you know, and I think it started when in 2015 and 2016, there was a huge influx of refugees coming into Europe. And so I guess people saw that and sort of transferred that over here. So, I mean, I'm not trying to knock people's fear. Like, you know, maybe they're afraid because you know, they saw that.
What if that happens to us?
Mm-hmm. What if it happens to us? But I think you're so right, Jennifer. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's so irresponsible, but it's just one of the many irresponsible things and that this, you know, that the government, you know, the current government is doing that it's, you know, it's, that's just beyond, I just don't even know what to say about that anymore. I didn't,
right.
I don't want to, you know, just make fun of people or criticize Trump so much. But I mean, it's definitely something that just has, you know, it just makes, it takes away people's attention from anything else. And yeah, I think responsible.
Yeah, and what I teach all the time, you know, I deal with conflict every day. It is my job. I go in as a culture change consultant in corporate America. And so my toolbox that I created almost 20 years ago with all kinds of tools as part of my methodology to help people move through conflict with, you know, integrity and positive and pure intent. And so I've been doing this for nearly 20 years, and I can see malintent a mile away because I've been doing this so long. You don't think people have tried to dupe me or use me as a puppet to make them look good when they don't have the intention of really seeing it through? I can see through that in a heartbeat. And it, I find it to be very manipulative at best, and incredibly destructive and divisive in our country at worst. And what I do know, too, is that fear, if left unattended, can create crises. So
yeah,
we may not have one now, but putting fear in the water at the pace and caliber that's being done on this issue right now could incite panic and crises that are well beyond where we ever started. And it makes me crazy. So I can obviously get on a soapbox on this for days. But the other thing that I would add is that. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So I've seen you in action, and what you say is what you do. I mean, the way that you approach things. And so I just know that I've just seen how you operate with people and your approach and dealing with fear. And it's amazing to watch. So. As you were talking about how you've done this for so long and everything, and it's so true. So your perspective is so valuable because I've seen it.
Well, thank you.
I've seen
you.
How you interact with people
thank
and
you.
how you sort of, you know, take a situation where I would have gotten so mad. And I'm like, and you just totally look at it. And so when you're saying that this situation with the refugees and the border and the hyping of it is, you know, you're explaining the dynamics of it. I think you're right on it.
Well, thank you for that. I really do appreciate that. I take my job extremely seriously. I'm extraordinarily passionate about it. And what I have come to believe over time is that there are literal physics to our thoughts. My methodology approaches all of that. And at the base of every decision we make as human beings, we are almost always unconscious of this. Okay, so it's not a conscious decision, but at the base of every decision is a fundamental choice between love and fear. It just is. And so anything that you pursue in your decision-making toward anything that brings you joy or peace or collaboration or, you know, anything like that comes from that love space. But if you're making a decision that creates and incites panic and anger and divisiveness, that's a fear-based decision. And so what you put out is what you get back. And when that multiplies over time, that becomes incredibly destructive. So I'm, you know, this isn't about finger-pointing or blaming or anything like that. It's about educating. And the whole point of starting the show was to tackle each of these issues head-on, one by one, and hear real stories from real people on the front lines to help overcome the ideas that are fear-inducing and get some real humanity back, get us back in our hearts, get us more love-centered. And as soft as that sounds, trust me, doing this with corporate America, if I can do it there, we can do it here, right? We can do it here. We can bring humanity back into our decision-making and into our behaviors and not be considered woo-woo or loosey-goosey or irresponsible on the other side of the table. No, it is 100% responsible to come at this from the right frame of mind. And that does not mean that we deny our leadership responsibilities in creating safety and security as our basic needs. But the way to completely neglect our ability to create safety and security is to incite fear. There is nothing more sabotaging to that than what's happening right now. So,
all
right.
So how do you?
I'm off my soapbox again.
No, but how do you address that dynamic with in terms of the refugees? I mean, I think, you know, doing this conversation cafe that we do and all that, that's one way to do it.
It's great, and I love that you're doing it. And, you know, it reminds me of when I was growing up in a small town in southern Indiana, okay? And I stress that because it's in areas like that that don't have access to urban diversity where there's the most ignorance. Meaning, and I don't say the word ignorant to be demeaning, I mean there's no exposure, right? I don't understand, therefore I create my own ideas, and then I become vehement about those beliefs. That's the process that happens when you're not exposed to greater truths or greater experiences. And when I was growing up in southern Indiana, we had refugee families from Vietnam after the Vietnam War. And I remember growing up with kids from Vietnam. And, I mean, they completely acclimated to our culture. I can't imagine. I was just a little child, so I don't know what their parents must have endured coming over here. But I do know that all that work came through our church. So we were doing that work back in the 70s that you are doing at your synagogue in today's world. And I encourage as many people out there as possible to take on those types of programs in your, even if it's a faith-based community, if it's through your, you know, private education system, wherever you have access to that type of influence and resources, I think is a huge start. Because the more we can put people in those situations and bring that humanity back in, the more we're going to help not just turn the situation around here in America, but around the world, right? Because like begets like. You put out love, you create more love. You put out fear, you create more fear. It's a decision. It's a decision. But we have to trust a ripple effect every time we make our individual decisions, because it's individual decisions that collectively create whole cultures. It's not just a leader, right? It's not just the leader. Now, the leader makes a decision that is either constructive or destructive, and the ripple effect is massive and profound and very impactful because they have such a position of influence. But that doesn't mean that everything has to go down under that weight. It means that we then have a choice to make our own decision between love or fear and push forward what we want in spite of it. And sometimes it takes a lot of creativity to figure out how to do a workaround, right?
Right.
How do we work around this? So, I mean, and just, you know, my little contribution is this radio show, hoping that there are some closed-minded people who are able to open their minds when they hear stories and understand better than what their own experiences are telling them if they're not on the front lines, right?
Definitely. And I have seen that happen. I've seen it, you know, when people came from the synagogue that were like, yeah, I'm not so sure. Or people who worked like outside of the, you know, they worked like as, they had some kind of peripheral job to the college. So they would come in and do something, and then they would walk around and they would start talking to people. And then they would say to us, you know, I it's really changed my mind. It doesn't seem scary anymore. You know, like they just, you know, and then people who came from the synagogue as well, that, you know, maybe they were a little bit afraid to, you know, kind of make that connection. But once they sat and talked with these people, ate food together, they said, you know, I changed my mind. So it is possible.
Yes. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love the story you just told, because that is exactly what I mean. It's exactly what I'm talking about. And I just believe in it. I just believe the power of, you know, we live in a world where technology is taking over. It's making us more isolated. We don't, we have conveniences. I mean, we can have Amazon bring us nearly anything we want to shop for. We can have grocery stores deliver us our groceries. We can talk to people through texts and messages. And we can virtually become so isolated that we just lose our humanity. we lose our humanity because we don't want to talk to our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And so slowly but surely, we're letting innovation bring out the worst of us. And I'm just asking everyone to be hyper aware of how that's affecting each of us so that we can all make little decisions that create bigger, more positive ripple effects.
Definitely.
And what you just described is that sitting down and having a meal with someone you don't know, hugely powerful. Mm-hmm.
It's just hard to figure out how to do that. You know, like just as a person, like you're sitting in your house, you're like, I'm kind of interested, you know, how do I do that? Like how, you know, I guess going, if you don't go to church or synagogue or whatever, it's kind of hard to figure a way into that community. So I don't know. I don't know how you do that. I mean, the college where I work now is, it's the refugee and immigrant community that have kind of made it. It's interesting because it's like the next step. They've come out of Clarkston and, you know, so, I mean, you could volunteer at a college, you know, this college is very, very, very diverse. So, and many of the kids are children. They're like the children of those refugees and immigrants, and they're making it, and they're strivers. It's the most diverse college in, I think, the South. It's hugely diverse. And so, I guess that's just trying to think of ways for people to get into, to find a way to connect with these people. But I guess you just have to get off your couch.
You have to get off your couch and off your phone. Let's start there.
Right.
And, you know, and it's not like you have to go out and change the world and start a whole huge refugee program or take a big international trip. Like, if you can't do that, that's fine. Start where you are. You know, my mother is still in Southern Indiana in the same small town she was born and raised in. She is surrounded by people who are falling for the hype in the media and have not had any experiences. And so the simple things that she does, she listens to stories like these and she shares them over coffee with her friends.
And yes, and that's such a
that's
great point.
A small, simple way to do it, right? So let's talk more when we get back. We'll take another commercial break.
Okay.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the last part of our show. We're here with Carol Glickman talking about the refugees in America and the differences between the reality on the ground and the hype that we hear in the media and coming out of Washington, D.C. specifically. So, Carol, a couple things. You know, we talk about, we've been talking about the misinformation, the ignorance, the fear, all of those things. But there are some real questions that I think have elevated the conversation. I'd love your opinion on it. People want to know things like, well, if one, you know, the president's saying we're in crisis, and then there's another whole faction that says we're not, and they can, which causes this whole divisiveness of conservatives versus liberals and blah, 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 conservatives versus liberals and blah, 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 blah. But that's, the answers are typically in the middle, right, of two extremes always in life. And so who really is seeking asylum? Who is seeking to do harm? How would we know this? Like, what do we have any data around that? Do you have any opinions? What do you think that is?
Well, from what I understand, the we worked a lot with the refugee resettlement agencies. I mean, it's a very rigorous process to get asylum here. I mean, it's like a 2-year process. You know, it's not something, it's very, very tightly controlled. So I think it would be very hard. The people who came in and did the bombing, like at 9/11, those were students. They were on different kind of visa. They weren't refugees. So if we're talking specifically about refugees, then I think that that's not a legitimate fear, because really 2 years it takes people when they tell us, you know, I've been waiting for 2 years or 6 years or, but they go through like a very intensive process to get asylum here. Mostly they're turned away. I don't think it's not a legitimate fear in terms of refugees. I mean, we are a country founded on freedom. So we have to let people in and ideas in. And I mean, I don't mean to belittle people. I mean, things are changing. You walk around and you go to the hospital, everyone's an immigrant. And I guess that's scary to some people. They feel like their values. I mean, I think that's the other argument, is like, they're going to, you know, our values are going to change. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to not be sort of a white Christian country. No need to belittle those people. It's like, how do you actually address that concern? Like, you're going to be a minority. Nobody wants to give up power. But I think the actual process that those refugees go through to get asylum is very, very hard. I think that's a human right.
Go ahead. So thank you for that perspective, because I think that people don't know that. I think that the hype that I keep referring to is exactly what you're talking about. It's taking a word like terrorist and superimposing it on a word refugee and inciting panic, right? And to your point, a refugee is someone who is struggling in ways beyond our comprehension. They're just trying to stay alive. And we're not even letting most of them in as it is. They have to wait 2 years here after a huge process of trying to get here.
Yeah.
So that's information that I think people don't have. Sorry.
They come in and then they have to wait while their claims are being processed. But I mean, the point also is like, what's going on in the rest of the world? You know, what's going on in those countries? I mean, is it also another, you know, criticism, like, you know, they're just economic migrants. They just want to come here to make a living. They're not actually being persecuted in some way. But I don't know, you know, that distinction, I don't know about that. I mean, it's people trying, you know, I don't know about that. But those countries are, you know, we could spend, and I think the European Union could spend a lot more money helping in those countries than trying to block people and build walls. They're building fences and walls to keep these people out so they never can actually apply for asylum. you know, they can't even get there because
right.
they don't want them to even get to the point where they can apply. Because once they apply, then that's something else. So they try, they spend all this money to block them. And you know, we're talking about building a wall, but we could just spend that money trying to figure out a way to actually what's going on in those countries that's so bad.
Right. Right.
It's a, just a bigger question to me. It's a question about, you know, what kind of people do we want to be? I mean,
right,
you know,
right. What are our values, by the way?
Right.
Because from the looks of things, we're not living up to our white Christian values anyway. So
yeah.
What are we really forfeiting here? So many great points here. It's hard to know even where to start to dive. But, you know, if you look at, like what you said, the economic migrants, right? The person that's just trying to strive for a better life. That is how the majority of our population as an American society was formed. Is that not true?
Yeah,
you know,
that's
weren't
true.
People coming over here in droves from Europe to try to find a better life? Weren't the forefathers leaving England to create what they perceived to be a better life? I mean, this is what we are founded on, and I know other people have said this over and over, but even if we find out that, let's say it's 50-50, half of them are coming from unbelievably war-torn or genocide-induced cultures, you know, those really hardcore true crises, and half of them are economic migrants, I guess my question back is, so what? So what? If our process is rigorous enough that they have to work that hard, they must need it that badly, you know, to go through
yeah.
a very rigorous process and wait 2 years with the chance that they could either not get in or get kicked out. That
yeah,
still, to me, implies the dire need to improve their circumstances. And
yeah,
so it comes full circle again to
don't.
Your question.
Yeah. What,
who do we
want to be? But yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, I guess people, I mean, just to, again, address people's fears, you know, if all these people come in and they have to compete economically with them, will that be a problem? But I don't think so. I think that they contribute to the economy. And the truth is, a lot of the people that worked, that come in as refugees, especially, they come without language, they come without so many things, they end up working like in the, you know, chicken plants. They're not jobs
yeah.
that people want anyway. Many of the students at Georgia Piedmont, that's what they do. They work in the chicken plant, or they do some other kind of job that nobody wants, but they don't need a language, you know, to be able to speak from.
Right.
Speak.
Right.
And, yeah. And so they're not really
right.
competing, they're contributing, and their kids become, you know, their kid, they come and then they kind of give up their lives, but their kids, they're strivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see it all the time, especially in the college I am now. That's who they are. They're strivers. They want to make it. They're grateful. They're humble. It's, you know, they're lessons for us. But
yeah,
they're not perfect
completely.
Again. So I don't want to sound like, oh, they're just like these perfect people. You know, I,
no.
they're not. You know,
and none of us are, but
yeah.
Yeah. And here's the thing. If we are taking these hardcore stances to hold people out because we're afraid that it will hurt us economically, like I said, like begets like. So you have an economic driven fear. Guess what? Without those migrant workers, we will have certain industries and businesses over time shutting down because economically they can't make a profit with the same workforce coming
right.
from an American population. So,
right.
so we're only going to bring our fear to life in another way over time. And, it, you know, I mean, I guess just let the experiment unfold because things – We're all talking in hypotheticals, but we, you
yeah.
know, I think both of us speak from experience in different ways that kind of land on the same
yeah.
conclusion.
Yep. And so, I would just say, you know, go and, you know, just make an effort to get to know some of these people, and you'll see that they're not scary at all. And then study and then learn about the whole process and who they are and what they contribute. And then I think it's not as scary.
Right.
I mean, so it's like, you know, use your mind and your heart. Right. Because I don't think.
The balance. Right. Completely. Yeah. So on that note, Carol, if we talk about the people who don't have access, right, to these people to have these conversations, do you have a thought about where to go for real information? If they wanted to go seek out information, and it's hard for them to filter through because they don't trust the media now, and, you know, half of them don't trust the media and half of them are hearing us, but they're thinking, well, I only listen to the president, whatever. Where else would I go to get a different perspective when I can't meet them? Do you have a source of information online or a certain media brand that you would recommend that's giving accurate information?
Well, I mean,
do you have any recommendations around that?
Well, I mean, there's the refugee resettlement agencies. The people that work there and those agencies, they're really good people, and they know, they resettle these people. So if you go on any of their websites, you'll get information about, you know, who these people are, about the process, like IRC, New American Pathways, the Catholic Charities. I think there's 9 or maybe 10 refugee resettlement agencies in the U.S. Donald Trump was going to close about 3 of them. I'm not sure if that's happened yet or not, but that was the plan, to just shut them down.
Wow.
Nationally. So, because there aren't refugees coming in, really, but those people are really good sources of information and, you know, volunteer opportunities, as well. IRC is huge, International Red Cross, and they do so much, and I think they do have good information. I don't know if people would consider that biased or not. I mean, if you really are interested, there's so much information out there you can just kind of pour through, and you have to be a little bit of a critical thinker, I guess, to kind of figure out what you think is true or not. But the numbers are the numbers. So those places will just provide you with numbers. Like, they'll say, you know, last year in 2017, for example, they 2,179 refugees came into Georgia, and that's a number. That's a true number. 4,900 people got English as second language services. You know, $3.2 million was spent directly by those people in Georgia economies. 85.8% of refugee families in Georgia were employed and self-sufficient within 180 days of arrival. And those are facts. Those, I'm not just saying that. Those are actual facts I'm looking at right now. So, and that comes from the Coalition of Refugee Services Agencies, which includes like New American Pathways and IRC and Georgia Piedmont. Georgia Piedmont just does ESL, English as a second language. But the other agencies do resettlement, which means they help people, you know, get jobs, get houses, they help them settle in. But they're just for like 6 months they get help. That's it. And then they're on their own, mm-hmm. believe it or not. So in all refugees coming into the U.S., have to go through a 13-step screening process, including 7 steps of security clearance. So those are the facts. Those are things that actually happen. They're, you know, they're not biased. I mean, I don't, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that all comes from, you know,
I do.
Resettlement agencies. So, yeah.
Well, and so, to your point, if somebody found the International Red Cross to be too biased to listen to their data, I would just find that completely devastating. Like,
right.
Have we become so,
like,
jaded that we don't trust any sources of expertise and information? That's just ridiculously paranoid. So, you know, I'm just encouraging all listeners. Yeah. Keep your minds open, everyone. Keep your hearts open. Keep your minds open. When our hearts and our minds are open, we are far more prepared and ready and smart, and we make good decisions, you know. And I think that part of the misnomer is that it's, you know, if we open our hearts, we're too soft and we're not facing the hardcore reality and we're not facing Well, guess what? The best decision making comes from that space, because you're finding the balance between what's too soft and what's too hard. And getting that balance is really critical. But you can't get there if you're operating from fear and false information. You just can't get there. And you will instead, over time, create your worst nightmare. So what parting words do you have for listeners?
And nothing. That's it for me. I mean, I feel so, you know, I feel good listening to you, Jennifer, because, you know, you have such good wisdom, and I've seen how you actually operate and how you deal with people and how you operate in your life. And those things are real and true. And so I will have a better day after having talked to you.
Oh, you're so great. I adore you. And I listen. What you've brought here to this show is invaluable, and it's exactly what I was looking for and hoping for. And I'm so glad we finally have this conversation, even though we're sharing it with many other people. So thank you so much for bringing all of your experiences and insights to the table today. Super, super helpful. And I wish you the best with these programs. And if there's anything that I can ever do to volunteer, I'd love to, and get the kids involved if that's even possible. So let me know if the opportunity arises.
I definitely will. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
I thank everyone for listening, and I'll be back next week. Thanks again, Carol.
Thank you. Bye-bye.